This is Pure Decking show number 442 for Thursday, July the 29th, 1958. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and a somewhat less than triumphant return. As per usual, we have Madman.
Hola.
And we have Are You.
What's up?
I thought about designating, you know, chairs, but then I realized it makes no sense to do that here. So
I will say we are socially distant.
Yeah.
Keep it within that rule.
I'd say so.
That reminds me, a big social distance high five to everyone.
Ah, yes. Yes, yes. And it's amazing how far back that meme has gone. You find all these old black and white videos of people giving
them. I know, right? There's always that one guy who's sitting down not doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
He seems like kind of a cunt.
Yeah, definitely.
Doesn't even know how to properly, you know, trim his mustache either. It looks weird. So.
Upsided and shit.
Yeah. So we were out a little bit longer than I intended to be, but that's just the way it goes. You know how it is when you're moving house. And I was redoing some of the server and resetting up the audio work, and I was still fighting with that just a few minutes before we started the show. So here's hoping for the best, because this is the test. There's not doing a dry run or anything like that. So yeah, hopefully the recording doesn't shit out on us, but that is it's what we got. So I did a quick post in the subreddit because I wasn't quite sure where else to put it. The IRC is very dead. Apparently, Freenode has changed a lot of their stuff while we were out. Because we were just starting to talk when we, you know, went on hiatus that Freenode was having issues. Well, apparently, they completely shit the bed. Were you going to say something, Mario?
No.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I just now try to use the IRC on the front of the webpage there. Yeah, must use TLS authentication and have a Sassel account. It's like, wait a minute. So now you can't even get into Freenode unauthenticated, at least through that web client. I didn't even bother trying with a traditional client. But, yeah, so, yeah, Freenode is, as a project is apparently very dead. So,
and that's sad, dude.
It really
is.
That's
so sad.
It's because, I mean, they had such a long-running legacy. They were the largest IRC network. So many open-source projects and just projects in general defaulted to a channel on Freenode. And, yeah, somebody got a hold of the DNS, decided they ran it now, and, well, shit the bed. I don't know how else to put it. So, and I was testing earlier, the microphone is in fact going to pick up every single one of my chair squeaks. That's just, there's nothing I can do about it. So, sit on the floor, I guess. But, anyways, so, I've been moving house and dealing with silliness at work. What you guys been doing for the summer while we were out?
I've been freezing my ass off because it's winter here.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about how socially distant we are.
And, yeah, that's giving me the excuse not to do fuck all, but fuck all is starting to pile up in a big heap real quick. Hopefully in the next month or so, I'll overhaul this whole room, get the soundproofing up, which has been sitting in the living room floor for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I understand that. I've got boxes of shit just everywhere. So,
yeah. I'll be doing that probably in a month or so. So, you know, probably off for about a week and pull everything down. I haven't decided how crazy I'll go yet.
Just enough to get what you need and then stop. Because if you do the whole room within a room, sound isolation, movie theater stuff, you won't be back on for months. You should be sitting there tuning every little square inch of the place.
That's the bit. Like, I've got to get a new mic cord anyway, so yeah, everything will have to get redone.
I was watching some videos on how to do proper soundproofing, like proper soundproofing. You're basically adding a couple of inches to every wall to get the kind of shit up. Because you're building a room within a room that's got like a layer of a specific type of glue and mass-loaded vinyl in between it and everything else. I mean, it is.
Well, that's what I've got. See, I don't have the little tiles. I've got the full sheet.
Yeah.
Like 3 meters by 3 meters, inch and a half thick. Yeah, that'll go up. The idea is I want to be able to play games without a headset at 2 a.m.
No, I get it. So, anyways, Madman, what have you been up to?
Hitting the gym more.
That's good.
And then pretty much working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, I guess we'll just get into this here. First article is from Reuters. Or Reuters, if you're trying to piss off the people from the old show. Yeah, White House calls on America's most critical companies to improve cyber defenses. I'm putting this out there kind of as a no shit, Sherlock. But I just think it's hilarious that you've actually gotten to the point that the White House is saying, guys, you have got to fix your security. White House is signaling to U.S. critical infrastructure companies, such as energy providers, that they must improve their cyber defenses because additional potential regulation is on the horizon. And that's the actual scary bit, is that this is the exact ammo they need to start passing all kinds of mandatory regulatory requirements when it comes to information security, which will be an absolute, horrible thing if they do it. Think about your car. When was the last time the seatbelt design changed? You think we don't know how to make safer seatbelts? It's not that we don't know how to make safer seatbelts. It's that the government has mandated you must have a seatbelt of this design in your car.
Get me started, man.
Yeah, the 5-point safety harness has been in NASCAR for how long?
I'm just saying.
And the opposite point... This isn't the first administration saying, tighten up your infrastructure, and it hasn't happened. Bush, the older, was talking about hardening infrastructure, not as much as to prevent ransomware, because I don't think it didn't exist then, but hardening against EMP, hardening against other cyber, against actual cyber threats, and it didn't happen. This is been talked about on several infrastructure bills, so it isn't as though these companies weren't given options to do it themselves. There's just not an incentive to.
Yeah.
So a bad regulation might be better than none.
Well, maybe. U.S. President Joseph Biden signed a national security memorandum on Wednesday, launching a new public-private initiative that creates performance controls for cybersecurity at America's most critical companies, including water treatment and electrical power plants. The recommendations are voluntary in nature. So there you go, Madman. But the administration hopes it will cause companies to improve their cybersecurity ahead of other policy efforts, a senior administration official said. Well, no, just like you said, they've tried to do it previously. I think Trump did a call for this too, early in his presidency. And just, yeah, unless it's mandatory, it will be ignored. Because, you're not going to convince a major company to spend money on this if they don't have to. And that's a long-running problem in my industry, is that, you'll have these business executive types who know what their business does, but they don't have a clue how their technology works, right? And so, we have a cybersecurity department, but you haven't funded it, and you've got, two people. It's like, well, but we have one. So, you know, of course, they'll write all these recommendations and findings, and you never actually fix any of it because it always costs way too much money to fix. We can't possibly fix it. And then, or my absolute favorite, well, all those findings are old. They're from old infrastructure. We'll fix everything new going forward. All the old stuff is grandfathered in. And what you actually create is a system of code auditing where if it hasn't been touched, they don't have to fix it. So, yeah, you end up with all kinds of crazy bullshit with this whole, businesses not wanting to pay for shit unless they absolutely have to. So, I mean, that's where your point of a bad regulation might be better, because at least then they're forced to do it or the government's going to smack them down.
I know regulatory capture will be a problem, and management might be writing this more than actual security officers, but can you think of a decent policy that could be universally applicable, or at least applicable in, let's say, the energy sector? Like, you have to audit every so many months or years or your setup?
Well, the problem is, how do you do... I don't know how you do... how you would write a regulation like that that would actually do any good. Because if you say you have to have an audit every few years, cool, they'll have the audit. They won't fix anything, but they'll have the audit. Now, if you say that... Because the problem I'm running into in my head with this is that the standards are constantly changing. One of the stories I was looking at talking about tonight and ultimately decided not to because it was kind of meh... was that they're discovering that malware authors are starting to change up the programming languages they're using, thinking that it might be an attempt at, making it harder to identify the malware, because now it's written in Go or Rust or as opposed to C or Java. So, you know, that's a constant cat and mouse game in that it's always changing. You know, if I took a reg written in the 90s for information security and was trying to apply it today, it'd be talking about modems and securing dial-up connections, right? That's not even a thing today. So, well, okay, that's not true. There are modems and there are systems that still use dial-up, but it has nothing to do with internet, right? Or, well, very little. I mean... So you would need to somehow write it as a living regulation to say you must meet current industry best practices and then, you know, have some way in it of defining what the current industry best practices are. And I guess what I'm more afraid of is that you're going to get another EPA, right?
Yeah.
And instead of actually fixing anything, you're just going to harangue people with useless regulations half the damn time.
Well, instead of writing it for a specific hardware, could you say you have to upgrade and secure network hardware? Or can it be written for a regulation written for what a code does rather than what language it's written in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the language is just an example. What it comes down to, Madman, is that unless you establish an agency or say you must meet NIST standards and have teeth to it, I mean, it's going to be so loosely defined that all you'll have is companies that write up a policy that basically says we are in compliance, and then that's it. You know, it won't accomplish anything. And that's what I'm trying to think of, is how do you keep it from becoming a paperwork joke where, you know, the companies basically get to write their own security rules and then try to comply with them. Because I've played that game where a company has a, you know, I've played the game before where a company I worked at actually would change their policy documents rather than fix a cybersecurity issue or fix an IT issue. The audit would come up and you'd say, hey, you guys are not in compliance with this. I've been telling you this. And they'd say, okay, hang on, no problem. And then, you know, about 2 hours later, I would get an approved, updated policy that just removed the thing they were not in compliance with. And it's like, guys, come on. That's not even trying. That's just, he goes, well, will it pass audit? I'm like, well, yeah, it's going to pass audit because you just took the requirement to you know, actually be secure out of it. They'll have a recommendation to put it back in the policy, but that's about it. He goes, okay, good enough. So, yeah, I've been in that situation where you have companies like that, and I've had management that wouldn't fund a fix, wouldn't fund anything. Of course, if an actual incident happens, their solution is just going to be to fire their IT and security people and say, there, you know, as opposed to actually reading any of the emails. I actually worked at a place that told me to stop writing security reports because it was making them look bad when I'd give them a report, and then 6 months later it would actually happen. The system would get breached, and of course they wouldn't have done anything about it because that costs time and effort and money. And so I was actually told to quit writing the security reports before the incident happens. So that one was a semi-government place, actually, now that I think about it. So,
if we're limiting it to at least the energy sector, I don't know if we would need an agency. The Department of Energy could be in charge of auditing, and I guess possibly even writing the regulations audit by.
Yeah, that's basically what you would end up having to do, though, is you would have to have, you would have to establish, either select one of the existing bodies, and NIST is the one that comes to mind as one that, you know, the government would be pretty friendly with, and mandate compliance with a certain set of the NIST standards, or, like you said, pass it off to a relevant agency for that industry and mandate that they update those standards every couple of years. You know, kind of thing. I don't know how you would write a law with any specifics in it that have teeth that would be relevant in 5 years.
Instead of a law, you'd have to do an enabling statute. I hate those, but there's not another solution, because just saying it's a problem, that's crap. You have to, if in government, the reason you're there is to solve the problem. So it might be an enabling statute and just have it evolve. But on those, I think if it's an enabling statute, everything they pass should have a sunset.
Oh, and then just require them to renew it every... Yeah, I mean, that could do it. But, like, you look at something like the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. The thing was written in the 80s, right?
Yeah,
and depending on how you interpret it, anyone accessing a web page could be considered in violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act if the person who stood up the web server forgot that it was there and didn't want anybody getting at it.
And that's just the way they like it.
It is a terribly written law, because there's so much based on intention in there. Because again, the people who wrote it at the time didn't know what they were talking about. So,
hell, I can still whistle down the phone and launch nuclear weapons.
The one I like is where the guy folds the foil over the comb before whistling down the phone. Although I have, they're presently buried in a box, but I do have a collection of 3D printed in very nice material, you know, like high gloss silk PLAs. A collection of Captain Crunch whistles stored away in case of emergency.
Awesome.
Because I thought it was fun as hell when I found the model and I printed it. And it took me a few tries to find a system. But, yeah, there's a couple of trunks if you drive far enough out in the country that they work. Now, finding a payphone, on the other hand, is even more of a feat.
Well, but, if you're looking for a payphone list, ask Saad.
But, no, I talked to a buddy of mine who worked in telecom, and he told me where to drive out and hook up a handset to. So I, you know, clipped an old phone cord and put the alligator clips on it and tried it out, and yeah, it worked. So it was kind of funny.
Does the article go into what any of these suggested regulations may be?
Let's see. Announcement comes after multiple high-profile cyber attacks this year. Crippled American companies, blah, blah, blah. Quote, these are thresholds that we expect reasonable or responsible owners and operators to go. these are the thresholds that we expect responsible owners and operators to go, said the official. The absence of mandated cybersecurity requirements for critical infrastructure is in what in many ways has brought us to the level of vulnerability we have today. We are pursuing all options we have in order to make rapid progress we need, they added. Biden on Tuesday warned he ends up in a real shooting war with a major power could be a result of a significant cyber attack on the United States. Okay, so Biden is threatening to respond with guns to somebody hacking us. That's terrifying. Federal government cannot do this alone. Almost 90% of critical infrastructure is operated by the private sector. Official described the current state of cybersecurity rules for critical infrastructure as patchwork and piecemeal. Yeah, no, no details. Just, you know, they're wanting to do it. So, and that's what scares me about that more than anything is that we might get really, really bad regulation written by old people who don't know what they're doing.
Even worse if they set up a government regulatory body for it. Because this is going to end up as bloated as everything else and inefficient.
Oh, you'll just have all the cyber, you know, you'll just have all the major players in cybersecurity. You know, your Symantecs, your Akamai's, your Palo Alto's, your Cisco's, Microsoft will get in there, Google will get in there. You'll just have all those companies in there, you know, lobbying, quote unquote, bribing the fuck, if you want to use the street term,
yeah,
out of the officials to mandate basically. It basically will have to be their products to meet a need, right? You know, the mandate will say, oh, you have to be running a quote-unquote next-generation firewall that does application identification and has these particular rule sets and is managed by, you know, oh, well, no, they can't actually say just by a fucking Palo Alto, but they're going to put every definition they can in there to say by a Palo Alto, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever company is giving them the most money this cycle. You know, same thing for the antivirus, same thing for the, you know, they'll mandate all this stuff where, you know, there's only one company that really fits the bill. You'll probably have 20 or 30 small players who manage to shoehorn it into their software to fit the requirement. But yeah, that's not how that game works. You just have Microsoft in there giving them a ton of money so that they mandate the use of Windows and Active Directory. Well, I guess exactly. It'd be Azure now, but...
So I said, it can't be a government entity, and it also, you can't leave it in the hands of private, because they're more likely to write the report and just go, ah, fuck it, too hard. So I don't know where you go to get a happy medium with this.
It wouldn't be a happy medium, you'd just have to choose the lesser of two evils, and sometimes that's what government is.
Well,
I think mandating a segmented network, like you can't have a power plant on the internet.
I think that's a fair one. I think there's some things you could just say are not allowed to connect to the internet. You have to air gap these things. If it's major electrical generators, nuclear reactors, that'd be another good one. Water and sewage treatment would be another good one.
Pipelines.
Yeah, pipelines, that'd be one. Anything with the potential to, you know, violently explode, that's probably something you shouldn't connect to the internet.
Food packaging plants don't need to have HR in the actual packaging plant itself.
No, you don't. And there are ways. You can do it in software. There are companies that like to sell... the one I saw was a mainframe company that was selling what they called a digital diode. It's like, that is the fanciest way I've ever heard a firewall be referred to before. But I mean, fuck, you could point a webcam at the indicating panels, and that way you could still have people who can monitor things, you know, at home remotely, because that's usually why these systems get hooked into the internet, is that, you know, somebody wants to get at it remotely or wants to be able to report and trend things, and that's fine. There are ways to do that without having to, you know, actually hook the SCADA system up to the internet. But, or the PLC, that's probably another one. They just need to mandate that if it's an industrial control system, it doesn't have an Ethernet jack on it. That's what they need to do. Because all these PLCs and SCADA systems have Ethernet jacks on them so they can be programmed. and people hook them up to the general network and program them and then never unhook them. I don't know. And that's the problem, is that this shit changes over time. So it would ultimately be, you'd have to establish a regulatory agency that can come in with the force of government and levy fines, but can actually update the standards on a routine basis. And you'd need an enabling statute like Static, or like Madman was talking about. And I hate that. I don't like that. I work in an industry that's heavily regulated right now, and it's a pain in the ass because you get regulators in who don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Yep.
That's one issue with some of the regulations. We have so many outdated ones simply because we don't let regulation sunset. So I think any enabling statute we had would also have to include every regulation. One, has to be voted on by Congress, and two, sunsets after X amount of years.
Yeah, you have to come up with a new standard every couple of years. That would be the best way to do it. I don't know how you would mandate it, but somehow you would have to make a real attempt at coming up with real standards. A lot of things are, but you'd have to base it on the good faith of the people trying to do it, that they're actually going to do a good job and try to do things. But the problem is that with most regulatory bodies, they hire people from the various industries they're regulating to bring in because they're the ones who know it. And so you will get a lot of people who's like, oh, no, we can't mandate that. That's far too expensive. And that might be true. There might be things where they do you look at some of the accounting regulations in the banking industry right now where, you know, it's $1 million a year minimum. And that's probably lowballing it for some of the auditing requirements for a publicly traded company these days. So, and that's just in the audit and bookkeeping. Do you really want to put that kind of overhead on every company that has a computer?
You couldn't afford it.
Depending on what we're doing, since we're trying to focus this on infrastructure, you could have it. You could have government funding for it. I mean, taxes exist for a reason. I don't mind paying taxes for a road. The whole problem I have with taxes, I think they're being wasted on a lot of shit. So, might have taxes devoted to just helping update cyber infrastructure.
You'd almost have to... Now, that's an interesting thought, though, Madman. You mentioned roads. Oh, that's a thought I'm going to have to play with. I don't know that I really want to get into it. We've already half an hour in. We only did the first story. But now here's a thought. What if information infrastructure was set up like the public roads?
I mean,
you buy your own car, but the government, your city, town, HOA, whatever, does the roads and the infrastructure that runs the roads and the snow plows and all that other shit. Maybe that's a way to go. Of course, that basically means nationalizing every ISP. I don't know. That's a good call.
Yeah.
I
think we need to think this through a bit more before we start.
Yeah, that's
talking about it.
It's an interesting idea to talk about. Yeah. That's about as far as I've gotten with that idea.
I haven't even thought that much about how you'd set it up like that.
You'd piss a lot of people off is how you'd do that.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders would be all for it, though. It'd be very, very democratic social.
I mean, are we talking about a regulatory body where I have to get approval before I can add to the road system? You know, like before. I think there's a long. We probably next week go down that road.
That's a whole show into itself.
That's what I was thinking, man.
You're also confusing something with roads. Not all roads are publicly funded. So just because we're regulating it like a road and taxing some of it doesn't get rid of private networks. You go through most major subdivisions, those roads aren't funded by the government. They're funded by an HOA, or they're funded by an endowment set up by the builder. The term turnpike, that's from a private road that collected tolls. So, like the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Yeah. I know this one specific is modern enough to be a bad example, but it was set up because it was set up by Pennsylvania, but the taxes were just levied on people using it. So it was being run like a private road.
Yeah, okay. This is a very complex topic that...
anything when you're going with how do we fund infrastructure is complex, and that's one problem I think we have with soundbite politicians. I want somebody that will think about it and, yeah, propose something that could be bad. If it's better than what we have, implement it, and we'll try to improve upon it. Not that I want bad. It's just I believe government is generally bad, and you just have to fix it. there sometimes aren't – well, there aren't any perfect solutions, so everything's going to have a drawback.
I don't know. I don't know on that one, so –
Want to move to the next story?
Yeah, I'm trying. I've been looking for an exit for like 5 minutes now. So,
this one you say rocket snail and move on.
Rocket snail. But although continuing with the theme of fucking with government data, this one's from Wired. On September 17th last year, the largest ship in the UK Royal Navy, the aircraft carrier HMS Queen Elizabeth, steamed majestically toward the IRC. The 283-meter-long fleet flagship was flanked by an escort of destroyers and smaller ships from the UK, Dutch, and Belgian navies. The six vessels moving in close formation would have made for an awe-inspiring spectacle if they'd actually been there. In fact, satellite imagery of their supposed location shows nothing but deep blue sea, and news reports suggest the warships were actually scattered in distant ports at the time. The Queen Elizabeth and its flotilla were previously unreported victims of a disturbing trend. Warships having their positions and even entire voyages faked using the automatic identification system, a wireless radio technology designed to prevent collisions at sea. According to analysis conducted by conservation technology nonprofit SkyTruth and Global Fishing Watch, over 100 warships from at least 14 European countries, Russia, and the U.S. appear to have had their locations faked, sometimes for days at a time since August of 2020. Some of these tracks show the warships approaching foreign navy bases or intruding into disputed waters. Activities could escalate tensions in hotspots like the Black Sea and the Baltic. Only a few of these fake tracks have previously been reported, and all share characteristics that suggest a common perpetrator. By international law, all but the smallest commercial ships have to install AIS transponders. Using GPS data, these devices broadcast their identity, position, course, and speed to other ships in the area every few seconds, helping keep crowded waterways safe. Military vessels are not obliged to broadcast AIS, but many do when navigating busy ports, sometimes under assumed identities. Although the range of these VHF radio signals is limited, a global network of public and private shore-based AIS receivers and now fleets of orbiting satellites also pick up AIS signals, which sites like Marine Traffic and AIS Hub then aggregate and make publicly available online. Yeah, this is the websites that track ship movements. This is how they're doing it. While fake data here does not directly threaten maritime safety, ships rely on their onboard systems rather than third-party sites. Aggregated AIS data is now used for things like cargo tracking, search and rescue, monitoring environmental crimes, and identifying sanction busters. Bjorn Bergman is a data analyst working for SkyTruth and Global Fishing Watch who has been investigating fake AIS tracking for years, usually to uncover illegal fishing. In March this year, Bergman read a Swedish newspaper story in which the Swedish Navy said the location of 9 of its vessels had been faked on marine traffic. Bergman had noticed these fake tracks on AIS website before, blah, 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 blah. So they don't know where they have no idea where these are coming from. But essentially, people are injecting into the radio traffic bad data because all this stuff's open and unencrypted, and I don't know how you would protect it unless you had some central body running it and issuing keys. But yeah, somebody is infecting fake messages into the AIS networks, placing ships in places they're not, and they don't really know. But he thinks several of them were, the article speculates that a lot of these are being made in AIS simulator software that's being used to sell some of these systems or demo it. Another thing they've noticed is there's some data from games showing up. Where was it in the article? I skipped around.
My World of Warships data is actually being used to spoof Navy carrier locations.
In the screenshot, the fake messages were very plausible, except that the confirmation that positions were false. Where was it? Yeah, here it is. Virtual yachts from an online sail racing game had improbably appeared on AS Hub last year. So, okay, that's what it was. They didn't say what the game was. But yeah, apparently there's a yacht racing game. You know, it's like Euro Truck Simulator, but with yachts. And apparently that was showing up in AIS data. So I don't know about World of Warships, but so they think some of it is just people don't know what they're doing with these systems, and they're broadcasting simulated data. But some of this has got to, they're pretty sure it's got to be malicious because they're fucking with, like, military data and stuff like that. So,
but to what end?
I don't know. I think it's interesting as hell, though.
I think it's test. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, can I do it?
I'm not just thinking.
See how long before we get caught?
Not just can I do it. If you keep your enemies from knowing where your ships are, that's a strategic advantage. I can see governments spoofing their own ship location.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. He did tell Wired that fake tracks were all shown as coming from shore-based AIS receivers, with none collected by satellites. Given that real AIS signals from civilian ships near the supposed warship tracks were received by satellites overhead, Bergman believes this shows the fake AIS messages were not generated by actually malicious transmissions. Instead, he thinks they were created in a simulator and then copied the data stream somewhere on the websites. So he's saying somebody's hacking the websites, but I kind of wonder about that. If they're coming from shore-based simulators and not making it to a satellite, it might just be somebody fucking around with old ham radio gear and have it on the right, have it in the right area to be able to point it at one of the shore receivers just to screw with people, or copy data from video games. Apparently,
yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's interesting though. One, I wasn't I knew the ships had navigation systems like that, but I wasn't really aware of the AIS network until I had read this. So, let's see. Next article.
Keep an eye out for other stories like that.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting when you have people fucking with networks like that. I had seen this one, but I was thinking I was going to skip it, but then RU sent it to me, so I figured, we'll talk about it. This is from BBC. Older Kindles may lose internet connections, Amazon warns. Now, this is the funny part. It's not because Amazon is no longer supporting these devices.
No. That's the interesting part.
Yeah, first and second generation Kindles did not come with Wi-Fi functions included, using mobile internet only. But the slower technology used at the time, 2G and 3G internet, is being discontinued in some places, particularly in the United States. Several other models will also be restricted to Wi-Fi only. The mobile-capable versions have historically been more expensive than the equivalent Wi-Fi-only models. But aside from that upfront cost, there is no mobile data bill for Kindles. Amazon pays those fees to keep customers connected to its online store. The affected devices include models first released as recently as 2016. Newer ones, which use 4G, are unaffected. Started in summer of 2021, some prior generation Kindle e-readers will not be able to connect to the internet using cellular connection through either 2G or 3G networks, Amazon told its U.S. customers this week. The switch off is outside of Amazon's control, as mobile networks repurposed the older parts of their radio spectrum for faster, more modern standards. The same situation applies in other countries on varying timescales. The UK, for example, operator BT has announced plans to phase out 3G support by 2023. Other British operators have yet to announce their plans. The switch-off affects all sorts of older devices, such as 3G-only smartphones, but such devices tend to be replaced every few years, unlike an e-reader, which may be replaced only once it's completely broken. Amazon said the first and second generation Kindle, as well as the Kindle DX, will lose all internet connection. The following devices will be able to connect to online Wi-Fi only. That's Kindle Keyboard, Kindle Touch. Okay, they've got several listed here. According to The Verge, Amazon has been emailing some affected customers, warning them about the change and thanking them for being one of their earliest customers. It's offering a discount for those who want to upgrade to one of its premium modern models. It's also possible to sideload books onto a Kindle through a USB bus, but that requires finding and downloading ebooks in the correct format. So I guess Amazon's not going to put out any kind of support for that. But, I mean, yeah, it's not because Amazon is dropping support for these guys. It's because they use such an old cell phone service or cell phone network service that... You know, the carriers are dropping it. And I kind of don't really know. I mean, I don't blame Amazon in this one. That's not their fault.
No, it's just the time marches on, man. Devices get old. Systems change.
Yeah. I wonder how long, I mean, when Amazon designed these things and said, we'll just pay the data fees for these mobile connectors, that was one of the things with these ebook readers, is that they knew they weren't going to be... You know, they knew they weren't going to use a ton of data because they're just ebooks, right? So that's why they were willing to do it. But it makes you wonder, how long did they expect to be paying, you know, the fees per device there? And it had, you know, somebody had to do some calculus on that and make the decision. And you kind of wonder, well, you know, what, you know, were they figuring out the average lifespan of the device, or were they counting on these old technologies getting, you know, phased out? I don't know.
I think it was a way to get early adopters to the technology by paying it for them.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And I'd say that just sort of lapsed, you know. They never really thought about it after. Because most people get the latest and greatest thing. So.
Yeah. Well, and they're even, you know, saying, hey, we'll give you, you know, you've got one of the old ones, we'll give you a discount on one that'll work. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You know, they're not, I don't know if it's a, how good of a discount it is, but I mean, you know, it sounds like they're actually in, they're not, you know, the bad guys here. So.
No, it's just ending.
Yeah.
My wife's got one, so that's what got me interested in it this morning. I was like, well, you're going to have to find a cable.
Yeah, I picked the wrong e-reader, early e-reader to back. I actually bought one of the original Nooks.
Okay.
You know, the one that run Android with a little touchscreen at the bottom?
Yeah.
Yeah, the support for those guys got dropped so fucking fast. Although it was fun sideloading shit onto it because it was running Android under the hood. But, of course, the screen refresh rates were so bad you couldn't do anything with it. I mean, you could read a book on it. That was about it.
That's what it was designed for.
That's what it was designed for.
You could read a book on it.
You can't complain when it does what it does.
It did what it did. I was disappointed because if they it could have done a little bit more, but not really. I did get Linux running on it once. That was fucking painful, right? Trying to use a Linux terminal on one of the early ePaper screens that had about, you know, I mean, that it wasn't frames per second. It was seconds per frame. So that was painful using a Linux terminal on that. But I did have a little bit of fun with that device. I actually found it when I was... moving, I found it in a drawer. I haven't decided what I'm going to do with it yet. Probably just trash it, but I mean, it's like...
I like that frames per second.
Yeah, seconds per frame, actually.
Per frame.
It's like, it's sort of like doing 3D rendering on a Commodore 64. It's seconds per frame. Okay, next one up is from Gizmodo. Citizen wants to pay you $25 an hour to be a night crawler.
Who wants to pay?
It's a phone app. It's called Citizen. It's the whole report crimes, and then they'll pass them to the police.
But it's not night crawling.
Oh.
Night crawling is when you take photos of traffic accidents and shit like that and try and sell it.
Let me read the article here then.
Okay.
The vigilante app Citizen, your source for pursuing footage of your neighbor's flaming homes and potentially deadly car accidents, is soliciting applications for users looking to live stream nearby emergencies. For $200 to $250 a day, you can be the hero this city needs. Alternatively, a tabloid fiend with a smartphone slowly devolving into a bug-eyed insomniac and losing any remaining shred of humanity because human suffering equals great content.
In Chicago, this who could wrote be a this? Way to die early.
Who wrote this? Whitney Kimball. Nice alliteration there. Citizen confirmed to Gizmodo that it's had such paid camera people or street teams since its inception. It currently has 12 team members in some cities, the spokesperson said. They described the street team mission as modeling, quote, responsible broadcasting practices by demonstrating how to broadcast in an effective, helpful, and safe way. Oh, you know a marketing person wrote that. A job listing on journalismjobs.com, which Citizen confirmed is for a street team member, describes the position as a freelance news hound who would be dispatched to locations where a dog has been locked in a car, someone has reported a missing child, a house is on fire, or other, quote, events. Applicants are expected to interview police and witnesses. It adds that it'll never ask users to visit actively dangerous scenes and that you're supposed to stay behind police tape. The job pays $200 per 8-hour shift in New York and $250 per 10-hour shift in Los Angeles. In LA, you get a driver. Oh, well.
That's nice.
Citizen told the New York Post that one user who streamed 1,600 videos and broadcasts from numerous scenes each night works for the app. The Daily Dot reported on Citizen's use of street teams in Los Angeles in late June, having noticed a man who seemed to stumble across one disturbance after another. It's not hard to imagine how dispatching lay people to scenes of accidents and injuries could go sideways. In May, an anchor for the app's live pseudo-news channel expressed regret for offering a $30,000 bounty with a photo of an innocent man who it claimed was a suspected arsonist and setting off a manhunt. Oh, this is so fucked up. I mean, this is what this. If you're going to do a news agency, this is how you do it. But
that's what news agencies were forever, is somebody out there checking shit out.
Yeah, if it bleeds, it leads. Used to be the catchphrase.
Yeah,
but I hate to tell them they're a day late and a dollar short.
You think
that website there? It's already being done for free.
Yeah,
I might want to add that on to the show notes for anyone's interested.
So, well, and they're also covering it because Citizen was in the news recently because they. Had a lot of people taking photos of and video of cops and, like, you know, during all the BLM stuff, they lost their mind because the people and citizens were glorifying cops. So you can see where the divergent ideologies might cause problems. So, yeah. But it was kind of encouraging. The app was kind of encouraging lay people to go insert themselves into situations to take photos.
I think they should. Get down there. Get in their faces. You know? Fucking film Antifa going at it.
Well, yeah, but this was more like just, you know, every car crash and robbery. And apparently there were a few reports of, you know, idiots with phones trying to take photos and videos for Citizen, like, actually getting in the way of the cops.
They're doesn't acting surprise like real me. Reporters!
I'd have to find the articles again, but they were funny reads. Next article, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Facebook has paused Oculus Quest 2 sales because apparently whatever they're putting in the face pad on this is giving people rashes and hives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're figuring out a new silicone cover and then they'll relaunch it with a new version that's cheaper and has more storage in it. But yeah, apparently they've got... Oculus reports receiving complaints of skin irritation from about 0.01% of Quest 2 users, or nearly 6,000 accounts, according to the CPSC. It's like, oh no, it's such a small number of users. It's 6,000 people. You've got a problem. So.
How many users do they have?
4 million. They apparently recalled 4 million of the foam covers.
Yeah, 6,000 is not a big number.
So
don't get me wrong, they can still fix it. It's not a big number.
But yeah, they figured out that it was the foam that was causing rashes, swelling, burning, itches, hives, bumps. You know, this is where you just start making shit up and inserting it because my God. Painful rectal itch. Wait a minute, what?
The 4G was a problem?
Yeah, it, they put out a statement saying they did not find any contamination or unexpected substances during production, but they think there are a few trace substances normally present in the manufacturing process that might have caused reactions. So, I don't know. I've got a Quest 1, although I switched out the face pad for one of the leather-lined ones. Specifically because I could wipe that one down with an alcohol swab after I let somebody else, you know, play the Quest. Because anybody who owns a VR headset knows the real joy is not playing VR games. They're fun, but, you know, unless you're spending a lot of money on VR games, you get a little old after a while. You know, you can only play Beat Saber so many times before it gets kind of boring. But what the real fun of owning a VR headset is putting other people in the headset and watching them flip the fuck out.
Torturing the elderly.
Hey, anybody who owns a headset, tell me I'm wrong.
I've played them and I've enjoyed watching other people play them.
It's great fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to watch static.
Difficulty, instead of upping the difficulty in the game, you just take a shot.
I mean, you got to watch it when we put static in the Quest, and that was funny. Because it took him a second to adjust. Then he was good, and he figured out the game. But, I put both of you guys in Space Pirate Trainer. It's always fun. Space Pirate Trainer is always a great one to watch somebody play because they end up laying on the floor, holding the controller in front of them, hoping for the best. Anyways.
I'm ducking behind the shield. Why isn't it working?
Anyways. And the last article I have for tonight, I do have a dojo after this, but the last article I have for tonight is just kind of funny. It's from hypebeast.com. Doomsday Music Vault to be constructed in Antarctic Island, in the Arctic Island near North Pole.
Kind of cool.
Oslo's early management group is planning a doomsday music vault located in the Svalbard Archipelago, midway between Norway and the North Pole, with a facility aimed to store recordings from at least 1,000 years. According to an extensive Billboard report, Ireland's global music vault is looking to use, quote, future-proof digital storage, unquote, to future-proof digital storage.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
To house important... Go ahead.
You can't future-proof something. You don't know what the future is.
No, the way you future-proof it is you have the media, whether it's CDs, audio cassettes, records, you know, hard disks with MP3s on them, and then you have the player to play the recordings right there next to it, and then a collection of spare parts to fix whatever's in the player has degraded. Because that's about the, you know, you go back and look. Go look on YouTube of all the people who archive old media. And they all keep collections of old players. To the point that trying to get some of them, I was actually trying to look into getting some of the, there's the last generation of mini disc players. You could also use them as storage, digital storage, if you hook them up to a computer. And I was thinking that would be kind of a fun cyberpunky thing to make a deck with, would be to have a mini disc player on the side, and that's your, you know, your data storage, right? But turns out those things are fucking expensive because you've got all these, you know, hipsters and collectors getting into it. You know, you go look up what a reel-to-reel tape machine costs. You'd think those things would be nothing. It would just be people trying to get rid of them. Nope. Those are expensive.
Oh, data storage. Think of how many companies use data storage on reel-to-reel. How many governments?
I mean, yeah. So I don't know how they're future-proofing it unless they're just having the player right there next to it. To house important music recordings ranging from the work of the Beatles to Australian Indigenous music. Is Australian Indigenous music considered important?
No.
All forms of art are important.
No, that is wrong. Scatological art is not important. You are wrong.
That
sir.
Escalated quickly.
No, I stand by that. It's not my cup of tea, but
okay. Yeah, well, I'm just asking.
I was just saying, like, it's older than Mozart.
I'm just asking questions here.
Yeah, I'm just trying to answer it the honest way. Okay, it's not my cup of tea, but just because I don't like it doesn't mean it should be excluded.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm sick of that fucking attitude that people seem to have today. I don't like it, so it needs to be gotten rid of.
Well, not liking it doesn't necessarily mean it isn't art, but as I said, scatological art isn't. Urine Christ doesn't need to be preserved. It does not elevate humanity. It does not elevate the art form. It is nothing.
The company,
same thing can be said with many forms of music.
The companies are, yeah, we probably don't need to put the goose march I made a few years back into there.
I think we do.
The company is also is already speaking to several technology partners, including Pikel, another Norwegian-based firm who also runs on the Arctic World. Who also runs the Arctic World Archive, a similar vault that houses copies of artifacts such as the Vatican Library manuscripts and Rembrandt and Edvard Munch's paintings. Pikel's migration-free storage medium is, quote, built to withstand the kind of extreme electromagnetic pulses that could result from a nuclear explosion, which could potentially damage electronic equipment and play havoc with digital files, unquote. While Slotvard's low temperatures and dry permafrost environment will, quote, discourage folks from visiting the area. quote, we want to preserve the music that has shaped us as human beings and shaped our nations, unquote, Luke Jenkinson, managing director of the Global Music Vault and managing partner at Early, said in a statement. In order to select which recordings will be stored, Early teamed up with the International Music Council to create a global committee. This group will then work with national music groups and choose the, quote, most precious and loved, unquote, music recordings from several countries. This is about safeguarding the future of music and in having these archives of the past, International Music Council President Alphonse Karabuda explained. It's not just putting something in a drawer somewhere and keeping it for 1,000 years. The public will also get a chance to vote on the recordings which will be included, but specifics of the election are still under wraps. The Global Music Vault's first deposits will be scheduled for spring of 2022 and focuses on the preservations of indigenous music. Future deposits will involve modern recordings. However, companies involved will still need to seek clearance from rights holders. And that's going to be it. Oh, Skrillex, no, we can't include Skrillex. He's not giving us the rights to archive his music for all time.
Diggy Diggy Hole can make it. They're having the internet vote.
I mean, 4chan's going to find out about this vote. And, I mean, well, it's like it's nothing but copies of different remixes of Baby Shark, sir. We don't know what's going on.
Everyone loves Baby Shark, apparently. I didn't know there was a death metal version.
Early plans to charge companies and individuals who want to deposit material into the vault, as well as allow listeners to have access to the recordings. The revenue will be shared with the creators, and equally a visitor center near the vault will be built. Quote, we don't want to be another record label, and we don't want to be another streaming service, unquote, Jenkinson added. But we do want this music to be accessible and celebrated and give back to the communities that actually own it. So, on one hand, this is actually really fucking cool, that they're going to make sure they archive off large collections of historical music so that in the event of nuclear apocalypse, somebody might discover it someday and find all of the music along with the other vaults they're building up in Norway. Like the Seed Vault and apparently this other digital vault where they've got paintings and the Vatican Library. Because you want to bring back those conspiracy theories after nuclear fire.
You also have Iron Mountain. There's a few places doing stuff.
Well, Iron Mountain at least is charging companies to archive records there. But
yep, they also have a lot of the National Film Registry.
That's true.
Watch old silent films. Head there.
So, anyways. if you just do as we say, I'll read that later. So let's, do you have anything on this archive or are you ready to move on?
No, I'm good.
What the
fuck was that?
That was supposed to be the Digital Dojo bumper.
That was at like 50 times speed.
That's like, is Rimshot still fucked up? Yep. Okay. Yeah. Something is wrong with the soundboard. It's kind of funny when it's played that fast. Let's see. What is wrong with this thing? Analyze it. Something's wrong with it.
Oh, good. It's the dojo. Fix it after the show.
Yeah. Well, if I go into the editor, it plays correctly. I don't know what's going on. It doesn't matter.
I say we keep it that for a while.
It doesn't matter. I'm going to post the link now. This is from the, I don't know how to say that name, IkuaMike.io blog. He put together a very nice write-up on using the Netcat tool. Now, you might be familiar with it. It's a old tool. It's been around for a while, and there's a few different versions of it floating around. But Netcat is a way of opening a connection between multiple Linux machines. So one, you set up a listener, the other, you set up a sender, and you can pipe data through it. So you can set up shells through it. You can pump files through it. You can do different kinds of tunneling through it. It's basically a way of just dumping data from a Linux command line onto the network. So there's a few different tricks with it. He's got some nice write up here on using it to do traffic redirection. So you can use it like a proxy server, doing encrypted shells, doing file transfers, like I was just talking about. But Netcat was always meant as a tool for just when you're interacting with Bash or a Linux shell, being able to pipe data around and touch the network. So he's got some interesting write-ups here on doing, you know, reverse shells, doing port scanning with it. What else has he got here? Doing some different access control. So it's an interesting write-up he's put together on using this little tool. And it's on most Linux distros. So, or if it's not, it's easily installed. It's almost always available with an apt-get command or something like that. But anyways, it's a fancy little tool. It's a nice write-up he's done, and I thought I would highlight it for decking. So now I'm worried about the other sound effect. I'm going to check. Well, no, you know what? Fuck it. We'll just find out when we go live if the other live sound effects don't play great. We'll do it live. That's all we've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it, pure decking every Thursday now that we're back. The Galaxy 15 radio site, which needs a massive overhaul. The subreddit, which hasn't had a post in a year since I posted, hey, we're back. And the IRC, which is currently dead. I got to figure that out. It's almost like I've been neglecting things lately.
It's just you've been building a house, dude. I'm pretty sure we can let shit slide for a while.
Okay, fair. I appreciate that.
Like, no, man, I want you to fucking stay on it, dude. I know you're not making any money out of this, but you need to keep it up to date.
Like, you should go read. Give yourself a break. You should go read the comment sections of people's YouTube channels and webcomics. And, I mean, actually, we did get some notes like that back in the day with...
you miss one show, dude. People go fucking ape shit.
It's like, yeah, well, you know what? I'll give you your money back. So
yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, there's a podcast I listen to, and he's hit or miss depending on the internet in his area. And people go fucking ape shit if he's not exactly on time, you know? In the chat.
I mean, I'm sorry it's we missed ridiculous. A month. I mean, I was down longer than I meant to be. I'm sorry, but it's just, you know.
Fucking apologize. Apologize for nothing. Yeah. They like it, they'll come back. If they don't, gives a shit. I'm not getting any money out of this.
So that's all I've got. Madman, closing thoughts.
Madman is off playing Minion Masters.
Madman is not responding. Press any key to continue.
I'm muted. My statement was, are you as wrong? Not all art should be saved. Some of it is actually bad and should be burned. And this doesn't mean art that you don't like. Because imagine Lyrically is a terrible song. It is a ballad to nihilism, self-indulgence, and self-deception, claiming that you should never plan for the future and not make the world a better place. But musically, it's great, and it's touched many lives. I can see that being preserved, even though it is crap. Gatological Mary should not be preserved. It's called art. It isn't.
Are you
it
rebuttal?
It should be burned.
I just... Madman's 100% fucking wrong once again. Okay?
I can't be wrong. I'm American.
that's where you come off from the start. You're wrong.
I'll be honest with you.
No, man.
I'm kind of retarded.
I think you're 100% wrong, man. Because... Then you're going to say, like, scat music is shit.
Yeah. Okay?
The jazz form that they call...
Scat, I've heard it.
Yeah. You say that's not legitimate?
It could be. Some of it might be. But just because something is something you don't like doesn't mean it's not art. But not all art should be preserved. Like my example of Imagine.
Yeah.
If you listen to it, it is... horrible art, but musically it's complex, it's interesting, and it's affected the world. So yeah, I could see it being preserved even though it's art that I dislike. But there's a difference between good art that you dislike and crap that people call art. Like the dissected vacuum cleaner that sold for $2 million. That's not art. They call it art, but it should not be preserved. The cow in formaldehyde that's been cut in 4 pieces, not art, should not be preserved. Gangster's Paradise. I'm not into rap music, but musically, decently complex for a rap song. Lyrically, it's telling a compelling story that has touched lives and was made by a pioneer of rap.
Yeah, I'm just surprised Aryu hasn't said reclaiming his time. I mean, I did ask him for
No, I'm listening to Madman's example, and I'm saying Madman's 100% fucking wrong, and should be burnt at the stake.
So why should the cow and formaldehyde be preserved as great art?
I didn't say it was great art.
Well, why should it be preserved? Because if it's not great art, why would you want to preserve it?
Someone put time and effort into doing that, and it means something to them. Who am I to say that they can't have it?
I put time and effort into my morning bowel movement. We shouldn't put it in a museum.
Dude, you're not presenting to sell it for $200,000, are you, Madman? Maybe you should start shitting on a silver platter, fucking coveting it in resin, and seeing if you can get some fucking money out of it. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, because I'm not going to perpetuate the wrong. Sorry, I'm white. We need to elevate humanity.
I'm sorry, I'm male.
Yeah, you go round and round all day on this, Madman, because you're wrong, I'm wrong, and that's it.
I've got because nothing.
There's only a limited amount of space in these places. I don't trust those who are in charge to do the right thing anyway, so enjoy it. Enjoy all art while you can, and even shitty art, try and enjoy it. Yeah, listen to all forms of music because you never know what you're going to like. And take psychedelic drugs while doing it.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Thumbs go nose down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.
And those are really messed up. I don't know what's going on with the soundboard.